Name something that gets passed around.
A joint.
A joint.
Now, streaming live on the Marijuana Agenda.
Oh, gnarly.
What are you people? On dope?
It's time for Toker Talk Radio.
Hey, this is great, man.
The voice of the marijuana nation.
Marijuana is listed as a Schedule I drug. That is absurd.
Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ. That's 650-534-2565.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Hey, man. Am I driving okay?
Toker Talk Radio is your chance to make your voice heard in the marijuana nation.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
Send that message with clarity that good people don't smoke marijuana.
Now let's get to Toking and Talking with your host, Russ Belville.
Hey, welcome back. It's time for Toker Talk Radio, and we are live from Delta 9 Studios, beautiful legal Potland, Oregon, and I mean beautiful. Oh, it's up into the 80s today, walking around outside here in Portland. It's going to be hot in Texas, I can imagine. Checking out the live chat room at mjagenda.com. Got someone asking, how do I get an account? How do I register my account? Right? Where's the registration? Well, there is no registration. If you're in the chat room, just copy that little bit of text above the chat room, that thing that says /MSG Nick Serve Register. And then, ooh, I got to fix that so it says password in there. Ooh, I better fix that. No wonder people are confused. I'll get that on break. Sorry, moderators, maybe you can explain it. There's supposed to be a password entry there as well. But basically, the command is /MSG Nick Serve Register. What you want your password to be, what is your email? And then you send that in, you press enter, send that in. You'll get an email at that email address, and then it'll have a link, and that's what'll register your account. I'll make that a little easier to understand. I just looked up there and realized that the password part was missing. So we'll get that fixed. There's a story or two here I wanted to bring up. First of all, relating back to that data mining segment on Kevin Sabet. He's trying so desperately to find the costs of marijuana legalization to show people it's just not worth it. My goodness, if it costs us a few extra dollars, why, we're just going to have to go on continuing to lock up black and brown young people for smoking weed, growing weed, and selling weed. and poor people, for that matter. See, that's where I'm lost on that issue in the first place, because to me, it doesn't matter if it costs more. It doesn't matter to me if there are increased social costs from marijuana legalization, because the government has no right to punish us for using marijuana. And I think there are less costs in so many ways. You know, Sabet and these guys, they want to add up what they consider to be the harms from marijuana, but they will completely ignore where we will save money from not busting people, from not housing them and incarcerating them, from the costs of them not ending up on a lower socioeconomic track in life because they got to check a box every time they want to get a job or they want to get a student loan or an apartment that says they're a criminal convicted of a drug crime. Doesn't want to factor those things in. You take all the negatives he can think of, which the things he thinks of, by the way, are specious at best. Throw those all in the mix, but forget all of the things that are happening that legalization has made better. That's evidenced in the DUI stuff, too. Oh, my God, there's been a spike of X% in DUIs from marijuana in Colorado. When you look at the raw numbers, it, like, went up by 9. They increased, like, 9 pot DUIs. But on the other side of the ledger, other DUIs, you know, the alcohol and other DUIs, the rest of them, dropped precipitously, like close to 1,000 or something like that. So yeah, maybe you caught 9 more people who were smoking pot, but maybe more people smoking pot meant fewer of them drinking or getting messed up on opiates and then wrecking their cars. See, they don't figure that kind of stuff in. Here's the other thing. Here's the story I wanted to get to. It's on Live Science. Marijuana-related ER visits spike among Colorado teens. The number of marijuana-related ER visits made by teens and young adults more than quadrupled at one Colorado hospital after the state legalized the drug. Okay, so first of all, you got to check out the numbers they're using. They're saying it went from 146 visits in 2005 to 639 visits in 2014. Okay, yeah, if I look back to 2000, see, it's like from before legalization to after legalization, to me, would be from 2011 to 2015. Maybe you make a comparison there and you say, look, here's the year before legalization, things were fine, we legalized, all things went to hell. But if you're going to go all the way back to 2005 for your comparison, shit, why not go back to 1885? There were zero visits to marijuana. There's been an infinite increase since legalization. I mean, that's the kind of fake science, junk science stuff they pull to try to scare us about marijuana. So they're talking about one per 1,000 in 2009, increasing to four per 1,000 in 2015. And again, 2009, we're still talking 3 years, 4 years before legalization takes effect in Colorado. And of course, the number one thing they won't mention is that, yeah, now that it's legal, teenagers who are having some sort of freak out on marijuana, got into the edibles, smoked too much, had a dab, whatever, are a little more likely to admit what the real cause was. Yeah, there's been an increase in marijuana-related poison control calls and ER visits, but there's been a massive decrease in visits for, food poisoning? Better take a break. We'll be right back. Check out your calls at 650-LEGAL-MJ, and we'll talk about what is public toking. Does your porch count?
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal Potland, Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House. Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb and licensed by the City of Portland.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Join me for A Sensible Future from Students for Sensible Drug Policy every other Tuesday here on The Marijuana Agenda. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Hello, Mr. Man. Hi. I'm working. I'm sorry. No food till this is done.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
Welcome back, everyone. It's just about 9 after the hour, and we're going to talk a little bit about Colorado in this segment, because the Denver Post has reported a story entitled, Colorado lawmakers remain divided on whether you can smoke marijuana on your front porch. House and Senate lawmakers are deadlocked on a bill to define the prohibition of open and public pot use. So they failed Wednesday to strike a compromise. The legislative session concludes in just a few days, and the debate is literally, can you smoke marijuana on your front porch in public view? The Senate bill would forbid marijuana consumption in any place where a substantial number of the public has access without restrictions, such as a park or sidewalk. The latest version debated Wednesday took it a step further to prohibit consumption in a, quote, place not protected from unaided observation lawfully made from outside its perimeter, end quote. Yeah, so If you've got a 26th floor apartment on in a condo and you have a balcony and someone on the ground could take a pair of binoculars and see it. Or no, it wouldn't even have to be a binocular. It says unaided observation. Okay. If you can see it with your eyes, you can look up 26 floors and see the guy smoking a joint on his balcony. That's what the Senate wants to prohibit. So in the House, some of these lawmakers said it's kind of stupid to be banning pot on the front porch, but some protections would be needed in certain areas. Senator Bob Gardner, a Republican from Colorado Springs, which is pretty redundant, said, quote, "My concern continues to be that in urban and suburban areas, property lines are so close that children walking up and down the sidewalks that are not 15 feet from a home. And frankly, it is a crime in Colorado to do a lot of things on your front porch, no matter how much you own the part of that home."
Yeah. Oh, won't somebody please think of the children?
Yeah. So Senator Lois Cort, a Denver Democrat, said she supported the language, quote, "I'm a child of the 60s, so I am familiar with contact highs, but that leads to the impact on kids, and I'm really concerned about that." All right, lawmakers. First of all, Senator Lois Cort, you did not get contact highs from your time walking around concerts in the 60s and 70s. What you got was a placebo effect of being around people that were high and being able to smell something that smelled like marijuana. Numerous studies have tried to quantify this so-called hot box effect, this secondhand cannabis effect that, oh my God, we're going to get a contact high. And what it took, they've been able to pull it off. They've been able to get people into a room and have them hot box the room and ingest so much secondhand cannabis smoke that they end up turning up positive for THC, active THC, on a test. It has been done. The way they did it is they made a room that's like 6-foot by 6-foot cube, right? A little tiny ass cube. And they pump in the equivalent of like 10 people smoking joints nonstop for like 4 hours straight in that room with no ventilation. And sure enough, yep, they were able to get someone to turn up positive. That's hardly someone smoking on their damn front porch and a little kid walking by 5, 6, 10, 12 feet away. Give me a break. This just goes back to the fact they want to discriminate against us. They don't like our kind. They want to keep us in the closet and hidden from view because of our dirty, disgusting, sinful habit. This is a culture war once again. Even though it's legal in Colorado, the culture war continues in this debate over whether or not someone's smoking on their own front porch, their own property, something that they have a, not just a legal right to do, a constitutional right to do. This is in the damn Constitution, people. Imagine the outcry if it were trying to ban people from smoking cigarettes on their front porch. You've actually got a better argument for that. You've got a better argument for the secondhand smoke from cigarettes harming those kids than the secondhand smoke from cannabis. Imagine the outcry if this were you can't drink a beer on your front porch because the kids might see you drinking beer and that would promote alcoholism, it would promote the love of alcohol. Because that's what they're worried about the kids. They're not, they say they're worried about the kids smelling the weed and getting the contact high and hurting their poor little developing brains. They know that's bullshit. What they don't want is the kids seeing it happen. They don't want the kids seeing adults smoking marijuana and nothing bad happening. They won't want the kids seeing people smoking pot and all the lies that their parents told them about pot smokers being degenerate losers being proven false. That's what they don't want to see on the front porches. They don't want it normalized. They don't want people to believe that marijuana can be a part of an average person's day, that a guy like me, middle-aged guy approaching AARP age, wearing a tie, could step out on my front porch and smoke a joint. And trust me, folks, I do. Do it all the time. Front porch, back porch. Just about wherever I go, actually. But that's another story. There's also, they'll try to bring up the cockamamie claim about, oh, the smell is so offensive. Oh, it harms me. The smell is so offensive. And that's just living in a city, folks. That's just living in a city. If you live in a densely populated place, there are going to be smells you don't like. Garbage, urine, feces, kimchi, barbecue, you name it. There's a million smells. B.O. Oh my God. Some of the B.O. some people have. There ought to be a law against those people standing on their front porch on a breezy day compared to the cannabis. If that's going to be our standard, we can't have obnoxious odors offending us, then there needs to be an anti-B.O. ordinance, right? No, there doesn't need to be an anti-B.O. ordinance. This trying to ban what is open and public smoking. And I think for most logical, reasonable, rational adults, passing a marijuana legalization law that said we're not going to allow open and public smoking meant, okay, there's not going to be, you know, in the streets, not going to be in the like a park, like a neighborhood park sort of festival. It's not going to be in bars and restaurants and movie theaters and places where the public has access. It's not going to be in hotel rooms and concert venues and sports stadiums and so on. I mean, other than it always has been and people have always done that forever, but regardless, I mean, when people were voting on it, that's in their mind, right? Open in public. We can't have people, you know, just openly smoking pot in the parks and, you know, in the malls and all that. I doubt very few people were reading that and going, oh yeah, we can't have anybody ever seen smoking pot anywhere, not even on their own property. Give me a break. Come on, really? This is the same people. This is the same type of nanny state people, same type of moralist Puritans that wanted to ban all the tobacco smoking outside. Like, we don't want the people smoking over here on the beach or in the streets or around people, around the doors that are around the public buildings or anywhere. Only these very limited designated smoking areas and in your house. You want to take the cigarette smoking in the house. Take it in the cannabis smoking. Take it all in the house. Nobody can, only place you can smoke is in your house, in your bedroom, door locked. 2 a.m. on a Tuesday under the covers. That's it. That's all you're allowed to do anymore. Thank you, Dennis Leary, for that line. And John Thomas in the chat room says, it's also bigotry against those dirty hippies. It is. It's, you know, look, open and public smoking is what gets thousands of black and brown kids busted in New York every year. Those kids are a little north of Central Park, if you get my drift. Because you go walk around south of Central Park, you walk around Alphabet City area, you go walk around Midtown, you'll smell plenty of weed. I did last time I was in Midtown. I walked all over Manhattan. I went as far north as Central Park and as far south as the 9/11 Memorial. Actually, I was in Alphabet City as well. So I did a lot of walking in New York City. I smelled weed all over the place. Somebody's got some sticky icky over there. Oh, that's some good stuff over there. What I didn't see? Bunch of cops. I didn't see a bunch of cops shaking people down wherever I saw a marijuana smell. Then again, I didn't get north of Central Park, did I? Didn't get to Harlem. Didn't get to any of those areas. This is the same principle going on here in Denver. Same principle going on here in Colorado. We have a constitutional right here. We're talking about numerous constitutional rights. Constitutional rights to private property, to smoke pot as an adult in the state of Colorado. This is just a sad direction that the legislature in Colorado has taken to get hung up over this issue, to get hung up over whether public pot smoking is a problem on someone's own property. If we're going to start saying you can't smoke pot on your own private property, your own porch or backyard, where does that end? Does that start becoming you can't smoke the tobacco? You can't have outdoor barbecues? I mean, if we're going to start cutting down on people's rights, and people think I'm blowing this up, but no, I mean, again, if we don't stand for the most vulnerable people, if we don't stand for the rights of us cannabis consumers in Colorado to be able to consume on our own private property, We're ceding the right to government. We're telling government it's okay to tell us what to do on our own private property if it offends somebody else.
Silent breed is people!
Oh. Hey, folks, that sound means that it's 420 here in the Pacific Time Zone. Time for our Pot Smokers Union Local 420 mandated safety meeting. I'll be safe if you will. Be right back after this.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all respected customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
It's time for Cannabis Facts About Alzheimer's from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A new Florida study in the journal Molecular and Cellular Neuroscience found that cannabis promotes the growth of healthy new brain tissue. It can slow the effects of Alzheimer's and may, in fact, be able to halt it entirely. A long-term study by Ohio State University's Professor Gary Wenk concludes that people who regularly use marijuana get Alzheimer's at a much lower rate than others. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for the Celebrity Marijuana Zone with Steve Bloom from celebstoner.com. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right, welcome back, everybody. 23 after the hour, getting a lot of questions in the chat room about this hour, Toker Talk Radio. Is it going to be a podcast? Is this hour available anywhere except the YouTube channel? And the answer is no, it's not available yet, but it will be. And here's the deal. I've moved to this Libsyn platform and it gives me like 1.5 gigs of storage space a month. And that works out to be about a month's worth of hour one of the shows for hour one. So I'm doing that right now. And then I'm saving the Toker Talk radios. And once we get the subscriber count up over like 100, I can apply to Libsyn's premium subscription services. And under that, that's where the VIP thing kicks in, where you do the 420 a month and you'll be able to get the second hour of the podcast. You'll be able to get Toker Talk Radio available just for the VIPs. But I can't do that until I can start the VIP thing to be able to pay for the extra server space that it'll take to hold that second hour. So it's on the way. I'll get that fixed as soon as I can. Also had a couple of requests to make it easier to get to the chat room and to the live video window. Yeah, I've got some graphic buttons I'm making up for that. So I just as soon as the show's over, I'll be able to get those posted. And what was the other comment somebody had? Now I forgot it. Oh, well. It's coming, and I'm getting everything up on all the other major platforms too. If you like to listen on the go with different apps, that are out there. They're available now. The Google Play Music app, you can find that at rad-r.us/MJA/Google. And I put these all in the chat room as well. Maybe some of the moderators can pass this stuff around as well. For TuneIn, it's the same thing, rad-r.us/MJA/TuneIn. And then the same pattern, small Stitcher, if you want to get it on Stitcher, small YouTube, if you want to subscribe on YouTube. And we're on SoundCloud again. SoundCloud is just soundcloud.com/MJAgenda. So the SoundCloud also contains all the links. And I think you can find all these subscription links on the Marijuana Agenda page now, too. There should be some subscription buttons that you'll find along the bottom there. They're for TuneIn and Stitcher and Google Play Music. We're still waiting on iTunes. I've submitted to iTunes, and that should be coming back shortly. And who is the other one that I've submitted to that we're waiting on? Oh, we got to wait like 2 or 3 weeks before we can submit to iHeartRadio. We'll get this out on iHeartRadio as well. So thank you again for all your patience as we make the changes. And I'm just thrilled that this publishes to so many platforms at once and does so quickly. This show, at least the hour one so far, will always be posted 6 p.m. Pacific time. So you can count on that again, like the old days. We'll always have your dose of the Marijuana Agenda. All right, let me get to some more news that has been happening in the cannabis world that I found quite interesting. There's a new study out. This one's published on Dove Press out of New Zealand, I believe. This is from the, it was published in New Zealand, but the doctors working on it, Center for Medical Cannabis Education from Del Mar, California, the Bastyr University Research Institute in Kenmore, Washington, and the Department of Medical Research Center for the Study of Cannabis and Social Policy in Seattle, Washington. And the study is entitled Cannabis as a Substitute for Prescription Drugs. What? People can substitute cannabis for prescription drugs. So the background on this, as they say, you know, more people are using medical pot for pain, anxiety, and depression. And they believe that prescription drug use may be decreasing in the states where medical cannabis is legal. So they took a look at this. Surveys of over 2,774 individuals, self-selected sample, who used cannabis at least once in the previous 90 days. They were surveyed via online anonymous questionnaire on cannabis substitution effects, recruited through social media and cannabis dispensaries in Washington State. So I will just start off by saying that's a little, not exactly the strongest basis for scientific study. Not randomly selected, right? These are self-selected. So these are people who may already have more of an activist bent and may already claim these sort of things, believing they're true, whether they're true in their particular case or not. So we should be just, you know, take it with a little grain of salt. But I still think it's some valid information we're getting here. So what they found is 46% of the respondents reported using cannabis as a substitute for prescription drugs. The most common substitute, narcotics or opioids, over a third, 35.8%, followed by anxiolytics and benzodiazepines at 13.6%. These are your anti-anxiety drugs. And antidepressants, 12.7%. A total of two drug substitutions per affirmative respondent. So not just one drug they're substituting, but out of 2,400 of them, 2,400 substitutions out of 2,700 individuals. The odds of reporting substituting were 4.59 confidence interval. So what they're saying is 4.59 times more likely that a cannabis user was going to say they used cannabis as a substitute than non-medical users. And they're meaning, you know, versus recreational versus medical, right? So if you're a medical marijuana patient, it was 4.6 times just about more likely than the non-medical user. And they found 1.66 greater odds ratio among those reporting use for managing the comorbidities of pain, anxiety, and depression. So if people had all three, they're 1.6 times more likely to say, yes, they were definitely substituting. Now, their discussion on this, their conclusions, they say these patient-reported outcomes support prior research that individuals are using cannabis as a substitute for prescription drugs, particularly narcotics, opioids, and independent of whether they identify themselves as medical or non-medical users. This is especially true if they suffer from pain, anxiety, and depression. Additionally, this study suggests that state laws allowing access to and use of medical cannabis may not be influencing individual decision-making in this area. This was an interesting point. They had found a slightly higher percentage of those who reported substitution were those who lived in medical cannabis states, but it was a statistically insignificant difference. So the substitution effect is happening whether pot's legal or not. People are turning to cannabis, the substitute for opioids, anxiety drugs, antidepressants, at least according to this research. So we'll talk to Dr. Mitch about that in a couple of weeks, or actually a week away, 8, 9, 10 days away. Also, an update on a story we've been bringing to you. Before I get to the update, question from the chat room. Hi in Hawaii wants to know if I'm coming to the Big Island. I don't think so. The International Cannabis Business Conference in Hawaii is the first week of December in Lihue. I don't know, the little guy, L-I-H, whatever that one is. The little island, not the Big Island. So sorry about that. Let's get to this story that we'll follow up on. We've talked about this before, the NFL and its reticence to allow its players to use cannabis for medical purposes. Well, the NFL Players Association seems to be coming around on the issue. On Tuesday's Outside the Lines, the executive director of the Players Union, a fellow by the name of DeMaurice Smith, said the NFL Players Association would quote, "We intended to present a proposal to the league that has probably more of a therapeutic approach to those who test positive for marijuana. The idea is simply to make sure that we understand whether a player is suffering from something other than just a desire to smoke marijuana. I think all of us would want to have a process where, if there was truly a problem, we're treating the problem instead of just treating the symptom," end quote. All right, well, here's the thing. It's a nice step. I mean, yes, I'm glad they're making a recognition here. But the idea that an NFL player would just be wanting to smoke pot just to get high. I'm just hanging out. I just thought, you know, maybe I'd smoke some pot to get high. Is ludicrous. They may get high. They may indeed enjoy the side effect of the euphoria from cannabis. Sure. But every player in the NFL who is using marijuana is using it for a medical purpose. Come on now. The chronic pain, the concussions they deal with, the anxiety of performing at such a, you know, superstar world level that they've got to perform at, the pressures of being a celebrity in some cases or being rich in others. I mean, there's a lot of things you can look at. And not to mention that, you know, this is a league that's had some problems with domestic abuse, has some problems with their players getting a little out of hand violence-wise. You'd think you'd want them smoking a little pot, mellow those guys out a bit. The really frustrating part of this whole situation with the NFL is that it's coming down to it being about bargaining. It's that they've banned them from using pot for so long that the owners feel like, well, if we're going to let you smoke pot, you got to give something in return. As if they should have been banning them from smoking pot in the first place, right? Well, now that we've stopped beating you, let's compromise here. We need to have a negotiation. You'd really like us to stop beating you and poking in the eye with a sharp stick. So if we're going to stop beating you and poking in the eye with a sharp stick, you need to give something else in return. I don't know, maybe the shirt off your back and your firstborn child. Otherwise, we're just going to have to keep beating you and poking you in the eye with a sharp stick. It's like weird how this has become negotiation over whether or not these gladiators, whether these athletes who we pump full of all sorts of ungodly pharmaceuticals to the point where, like, what was that one? The one NFL player talking about getting an injection of something every day for 9 years that the FDA says you shouldn't do more than 5 days in a row because it'll kill your kidneys. We'll accept that. That's all cool. Pump them full of that stuff. But God forbid we let them smoke pot without trading something off in return. It's just insane. It's cruel and unusual punishment when we know the effect that cannabis has in protecting these men's brains from the terrible toll that the game takes on them. No. This is very little to do with the negotiation points and a lot to do with the advertisers on the NFL telecast that are paying $700,000 for a 30-second commercial to promote their beer, to promote their boner pills, to promote their anxiety drugs, whatever the hell it might be.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
This is Cannabis Facts from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. Supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. In 1937, the second most prescribed medicine, marijuana, was banned. It wasn't about marijuana. The paper, oil, and chemical industries lobbied to end hemp farming. No longer labor-intensive, an acre of hemp produced more quality paper than 4 acres of trees. Plastics and fibers could be produced from a plant. Hemp can even produce 10 times the energy of today's ethanol. As marijuana prohibition ends, many states now allow farmers to again grow hemp. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to process America's hemp crop at hempinc.com.
The marijuana agenda, like the alcohol agenda. But a lot safer.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for the Cannabis Minority Report from the Minority Cannabis Business Association. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
I have a package here for Radical Rick. Is there a Radical Rick here? How about a Rick Russ? Any Rick Russ? Somebody named Freddie Barak has sent him a package? Anybody? What is that? Sounds like a skunk. It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Almost 39 after the hour, and we're taking a look at the Pacific Northwest in this segment. A couple of stories coming out. Number one, right here in Oregon. Headline from the Oregonian reads, State fines marijuana company for safety violations in butane blast. An Astoria cannabis business was fined $5,300 for a series of workplace safety violations related to a butane-fueled explosion last fall that landed one man in a Portland burn unit. Oregon OSHA cited higher-level concentrates for failing to ventilate the building, failing to have an adequate electrical system, and failing to obtain city permits. The company also didn't notify Oregon OSHA of the hospitalization as required. William Chris West, who was in the building at the time of the blast, was admitted to the Legacy Oregon Burn Center in Portland. West is a partner in the company, and Jason Oye is the manager, according to OSHA records. So, this is the kind of thing when you get a BHO blow up in a legal state under a supposedly legally operating business. This is the kind of thing that Kevin Sabet salivates over, loves to hear this kind of stuff. And it's important for us to understand that bad things will continue to happen in marijuana, even though there's legalization. There will be bad things that happen. There will be kids that will get into edibles and might have a bad trip on them. There will be people who will wreck their cars on marijuana. There will be explosions of BHO. There will be house fires from poorly wired grows. But those things have always existed. That has always been a risk in life. Legalization doesn't create these risks. They help to ameliorate them. Here we have a company being fined, being regulated. We have it out in the open and exposed to everyone, and we have courts dealing with it and laws to deal with it. Rather than some guy gets caught doing it, blows up someplace, gets thrown in prison. Next guy that does it just knows, oh, well, I better keep it on the down low, much more on the down low, or get thrown in prison. With this kind of situation, the next company that wants to put together some sort of processing realizes, hey, you know, we need to do this the right way. We can do this. We can make money at this. This can be a legal operation, but we have to follow the rules. This is what we want. We want legalization to provide this sort of guidance, to provide this level of regulation and inspection. The fact that legalization happens does not mean BHO explosions are going to disappear. What we do hope it means is there's fewer of them, that the places working with this stuff are better regulated, and the people doing it are better trained. It's like the argument we get about the black market, or the underground market, I prefer to say. Oh, we legalized marijuana, and yet the underground market is thriving. You people said that legalizing marijuana would make the underground market go away. Well, I never said that. There's always underground markets. There's underground markets in DVDs and purses. And, you know, there's counterfeit everything. You can there's an underground market for anything you can buy or sell. The question is, how much of the market is underground? The argument seems to be from our opponents that, well, doggone it, we couldn't stop people from selling weed illegally, so we're just going to have to let everybody sell weed illegally. Isn't that the argument, right? Well, we couldn't stop everybody from doing it illegally, so let's make that the standard. Right? No, under legalization, a lot of what was going on that was illegal has now become legal and regulated and taxed, and we're getting benefit from it. We're having oversight on it. Why would we want to give that back? Why would we want to give that up and put it all back into the part you're criticizing? I don't know what the percentages are, but let's use a number just for fun. Let's say 20%. Oh my God. 20% of the sales going on in marijuana these days are on the underground market. See, legalization didn't get rid of the underground market. Right, didn't get rid of all of it, got rid of 80% of it. Right? How is that a bad thing? These people, these Kevin Sabets and Patrick Kennedys, they want you to think binary. They want you, and they're the ones always saying, oh, the other side, you know, the legal, they always say it's a dichotomy, legalization or prohibition. They're always such binary thinkers. But that's what they want you to do. They want you to think binary. Legalization didn't cure everything, so it can't be good. It's all good or it's all bad. No, there's a lot of nuance here. There's a lot of changes that are happening. It goes back to the point we were making earlier about how the mere legalization of marijuana, allowing people to be more honest about it, allowing people to take it up without fear of retribution, at least from the law enforcement, they can still get fired from their job and lose their house and lose their kids and lose their educational aid, but at least not from law enforcement, is nothing but a good thing. Because all of the bad things that could happen from marijuana no longer have the criminal stigma keeping those things underground. The kids who get the bad trip on the marijuana cookies can now admit that to the doctor in the ER. The people who have a home break-in, someone came and tried to steal their marijuana plants, they can now call the cops and give a description of the perpetrator and try to get this thing solved and not worry that they're the ones that's going to get hauled away in cuffs for reporting that their marijuana got messed with. Now, we've got situations where if there are bad deals going down, that people can be more likely to want to report them. That they don't have to fear that their attention to the situation is going to lead to attention to their situation from the police. I got too many stories I could tell you from people in red states all over this country where they had something terrible was going on next door, nearby. There was a gunshot. Somebody's being shot. Someone's getting domestic violence. Somebody's being beaten. So they're witnessing something getting stolen, whatever. And they call the cops, and the cops show up, and as soon as they see the pot pipe or the joint in the ashtray, suddenly it's no longer an investigation of what the call was about in the first place, the assault, the rape, the theft, whatever it might have been. Now it's, oh, look, a nice, easy case of a pothead where we can seize a whole bunch of stuff, and they won't be really violent and fight back against us. We can put them to work in the prison, and they'll be pretty good workers because pot people are pretty mellow, right? That's what this all comes down to. There's another story, speaking of red states. This one's coming out from my KTVB.com, which was the NBC affiliate I grew up watching in Boise, Idaho. Title of their story, Garden City Business Set to Sell CBD Oil After Finding Loophole in the Law. Oh, boy. Okay, first of all, you have to understand a little bit about Idaho, Boise, Idaho. Boise, Idaho has one sub-city. You know how, like, Los Angeles will have like a million cities in it, you know, the city of industry and Pomona and all these. I'm probably messing it up. I'll stop giving examples. I don't know what I'm talking about, but at least in Boise, it's got one of them little incorporated cities that's inside, mostly inside of Boise. And it's called Garden City. When I was growing up there, we used to call it Garbage City because Garden City is kind of like, well, first of all, it doesn't have its own school district. There's no schools in Garden City. They got a police department, no schools. That's the first sign. Second sign, it's where you find all your scrap metal recyclers and garbage company and used car lots and that one big roadhouse bar that always goes through a new owner every couple of years and there's always some big drug bust there. You know, it's that side of town for Boise, okay? So this Garden City business set to sell CBD oil after finding loophole in the law. So Idaho, as you know, is the only state where the governor, Butch Otter, the angry gay sea mammal, banned or vetoed CBD oil for the epileptic kids. But he got such a hue and cry over this. People went, oh my God, you freaking animal, that he signed an executive order allowing, at the time, 25 of them to be involved in an FDA Epidiolex trial. That's since been expanded to 40. So there's 40 families, according to the KTVB story, 40 families in Idaho are being given clinical trials of Epidiolex, the FDA-approved CBD oil. It's not FDA-approved. That's why there is a clinical trial. Simple reporting. To see if it has any impact on seizures. Well, this is lovely if you're the parent of a child and there's a 50-50 chance your kid's getting a placebo. Isn't that fun? But anyway, the loophole that this Garden City business thinks they can walk through is it's illegal to sell any part of the marijuana plant except for the mature stalk. Mike Larson with Welcome to Science says that's where they're getting their CBD oil from the mature stalks of cannabis plants. No, I'm afraid our judges say that is incorrect. Larson said, quote, so all our products are derived from the mature stalks of plants, so not from the buds or the leaves or anything else, end quote. Larson says they're working with a company out of California to isolate the CBD from the hemp stalk, which means none of the other ingredients, including the psychoactive chemical found in marijuana, THC, will be in their oils. Quote, they just extract the CBD from the plant, the CBD molecule itself, they break it down and extract that out, and then we infuse that into the products themselves, so there's no THC anywhere in our products, end quote. Oh, man, I've been saying this for a long time, that somebody's eventually going to be the case that tests this CBD oil is legal in all 50 states bullshit. And Elisha Figueroa, the drug czar of Idaho, is just the kind of person to take this up. She says CBD, like THC, is also illegal, saying, quote, CBD is illegal according to Idaho law and according to federal law. So with or without THC, CBD is illegal. And Larson says the products that we're selling with no THC that are derived from mature stocks have always been legal in Idaho. They've never been illegal. Figueroa comes back and says, no, as a law enforcement has confiscated those products and had them tested, oftentimes they are coming back not including CBD or including THC or including another synthetic drug that is not related to marijuana. Figueroa added that many online research studies have shown that CBD can only come from the flower of the cannabis plant. Quote, the issue being that when you look at research and how CBD is made, the experts will tell you that it's made from the flower of the plant, which is absolutely marijuana, end quote. Here's where this confusion comes up, folks. If you take a hemp stock, you can get some CBD out of that hemp stock. But you're not getting it from the stock. You're not getting it from the bast fibers, the herd fibers, any part of the stock. You're getting it from the resin of the plant that has stuck to the stock. You know, those stocks that are kind of, they got a little sticky to them. The sticky is where the CBD is being extracted from. And the sticky is resin. And resin under both Idaho and federal law is a controlled substance. It is one of the parts of the cannabis plant that's been defined in statute as being a controlled substance. They don't have to spell cannabidiol out because it's part of that resin. The stock part that's legal is the bast fiber and the herd fiber of the hemp stock. Not anything resinous you get out of it, and certainly not a cannabinoid that you get out of it. Somebody's going to go to jail, go to prison over this in Idaho. Could be the state to do it.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association and the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
It's time for Cannabis Facts about Teen Drug Use from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A recent survey by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control indicates that in states that have legalized medical marijuana, the rate of marijuana consumption among high school students has not increased. In fact, in legal states like Colorado, teen use has actually decreased significantly. It's simply no longer a big deal for teenagers in legal states. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for a cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine from the Burning Issues podcast on cannabisradio.com. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Vacation to North Dakota, you know, because they've got a town called Argusville. What are you smoking there, boy?
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
Welcome back, everybody. Closing up shop here at Delta 9 Studios. And reminding you that if you want to get your room here, Delta 9 House and Studios, you need to do it quick. They book really quickly, and the weather is getting awesome here in Portland. We are Portland's 420 friendliest cannabis Airbnb, so check us out at delta9house.com. And we've also got the subdomain, well, actually, we've got another website, delta9.house. Yeah, they have dot house domains now. And you can book either room by going to indica.delta9.house or sativa.delta9.house. So check that out. A couple of quick stories from the celebrity world here, and a quick reminder that I have the coolest congressman in the United States Congress, and that would be, of course, Representative Earl Blumenauer. Yes, we love Earl Blumenauer with his bow ties and his little bicycle pin. You know, he bikes. He's an avid bicyclist. He bikes to work in Washington, D.C. Everybody knows him for being the biking guy, the biking congressman with the bow tie. So he had a 420 Ask Me Anything session on the website Reddit. And according to the Oregonian, bow ties met barks Thursday when Snoop Dogg popped into Representative Earl Blumenauer's Reddit AMA to ask how celebrities could help with legalization efforts on Capitol Hill. So this was, yeah, back on 420, but I just wanted to report, it was the first time I'd seen this. So so the account, Here Comes the King, which is Snoop Dogg's Reddit account, asks, what can celebs do to use their voice to support legalization? And Rep. Blumenauer replies, Snoop, you have already done more than you know for this effort. Having celebrities continue to speak out and to help people understand that marijuana has gone mainstream goes a long way. I would also invite you to join me in Washington, D.C. to a Congressional Cannabis Caucus meeting when you're in the area. P.S. We love having your Uncle Rio's Rib Shack in our neighborhood here in Portland. End quote. Fantastic. Loving that. Yeah, Snoop's uncle. Yeah, seriously. Has a rib shack here in Portland. It's awesome ribs if you're into barbecue ribs. And the Congressional Cannabis Caucus, of course, Blumenauer, one of four bipartisan representatives to have formed the caucus. And I don't know how many more members they've gotten, but we are going to be focusing on that in a regular segment called Government at Work. So we'll keep you posted on whether or not Snoop Dogg ends up in D.C. at the Cannabis Caucus. I think that would be pretty awesome. In other celebrity news, the Associated Press is reporting that Miley Cyrus says she's completely clean after giving up marijuana. Yes, Miley Cyrus supposedly giving up marijuana. A Billboard magazine reported in April in an interview. This was published online Wednesday, yesterday, that she hasn't smoked marijuana in 3 whole weeks.
three weeks. Okay.
Wow. You've quit. You've gone 3 weeks. Wow. She says that's the longest she's ever gone without weed. I don't believe that. I doubt as an infant you were smoking weed, Miley. I mean, I know Billy Ray Cyrus was a star and all, but what does that mean? You mean since you started smoking weed at whatever age? 3 weeks is the longest you've gone without smoking weed? I'm sorry, I just don't buy it. Anyway, yeah, so she supposedly has stopped smoking weed. I don't know, maybe this is good news for us. I don't know that she's the best representative of the weed smoking community. She is the namesake, though, of one of the four hot, naked, underage chicks we keep in a cage here at Delta 9 Studios. That's right. You didn't know we've got a cage full of hot, naked, underage chicks here. Check out the YouTube page, my Radical Rest YouTube page. You can see these four hot, naked, underage chicks in a cage. Miley Cyrus is one of them. She's the blonde chick in the cage. We've also got a redhead chick in a cage, a brunette chick in a cage, and a black chick in a cage. So pretty awesome. You gotta check this out. It's uncensored footage at youtube.com/radicalrust. That sound means that we are out of time, and later tonight I'm getting on a plane headed to Fort Worth, Texas. Hope to see you there at the Global Cannabis March. Check out dfwnormal.org/march. For everyone here at Delta 9 Studios, I'm Russ Belville. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and SoundCloud. And follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com. MarijuanaNation.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you giant, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it.